Absolutely, he's here. So, alhamdulillah, you guys are good.
As-salamu alaykum.
Alaykum as-salam.
How are you guys?
Good, alhamdulillah.
How about yourself?
Good, alhamdulillah. Can you explain a little bit? Are we live now?
Yep. We're okay. Live. Yeah, we're ready to go.
All right.
All right, so as-salamu alaykum, everyone. Welcome to another night of MYG. My name is Maryam.
My name is Amina.
And we're your guys' co-hosts for tonight's event. On our panel, we're going to be discussing today some of the propositions that people will be able to vote to for this coming election. And with us, we have a brother Nizam from KRLA. He's the Valley Outreach Manager for KRLA, and he's been a part of the community for quite some time now. He spent about 10 years organizing in the Muslim community, getting them involved in civil engagement and advocacy work. And we're more than honored to have him on our panel tonight.
Assalamu alaikum. Thank you so much, Sister Maryam and Sister Amina. Thank you so much for inviting me. And I'd like to just get started as far as the start out by talking a little bit about voting is the easiest way to bring change to your community. So as Muslim Americans, we are citizens of the country, and it's imperative to take part in our democracy. It's a way to fight for justice and against injustice. So whether it is social, economic, or climate justice, it's obligatory on American Muslims to stand up for what is good and stand against what is evil. So we are told by our Prophet Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, if you see an injustice, change it with your hand. And if you can't do that, change it with your tongue. And if you can't do that, hate it in your heart, although that is the weakest of faith. What easier way is there to make a change than with your hand by casting a ballot? You may have already voted by the mail already. And this weekend coming up will probably be the most time that people will vote for this in this election. The nice thing is you can vote on November 3rd, but you could also vote the weekend before. So starting October 31st, November 1st, and November 2nd, and November 3rd, you'll be able to cast your vote by walking into your local registrar's office. And now this year, we have what's called a voting center. You can actually go into the secretaryofstate.ca.gov, and there's thousands of these voting centers all across the counties in California, and you're able to cast your vote. And you can actually, even if you haven't registered to vote, the date to get a mail-in ballot was on October 19th. So if you didn't register and you still need to register, you still have time, you can walk in on any of those days, present your ID. As long as you're 18, you're a citizen, you can get your ballot and then cast your vote. So the pandemic has changed quite a few things the way we participate in this year's election. Besides the voting centers, We can't hold in-person candidates, so we don't see our brothers and sisters except on calls like this and except on Zoom calls. We miss the hugs. We miss the kids running around. We miss see our brothers and sisters, and we definitely miss the food in the masjid. So in the last few months, CARE chapters across the state have been holding weekly Facebook Live events to educate our community on the importance of voting. We discuss the statewide propositions to educate and empower our communities, and hopefully we'll be doing that tonight. So KRLA has held virtual candidate forums that you may have attended in OC, in the Inland Empire, and Ventura County. Last night, we held our first virtual ballot party for the Valley, where we talked about propositions and we talked about local measures as well. We brought voter education and outreach to youth groups and MSAs across California. And in many cases, the MSAs took the lead. Although we, as a community, are experiencing Zoom fatigue, these events allowed us the flexibility on joining these candidate forums and ballot parties from anywhere, and it also gave the candidates flexibility as well. You can see these events on our KRLA Facebook page in case you missed anything, if you still want information. So we have introduced our voter guide. I'm not sure if you all had a chance to see it, but it's available at on our website at KRLA.org. This is a statewide voter guide. And in addition to the propositions, we also have a list of candidates on the issues that they stand for and how an incumbent voted on certain legislation while they were in office. So we have about a week and a half to vote. The most important election of the year of our lifetime is upon us. We have a record turnout already across our country and in our state. So out of 21.5 million registered voters in California, About a fifth or a little more than 4 million voters have already voted as of yesterday. So this is three times of those who voted in 2016 during the same period. This is according to the Secretary of State. To keep voters safe during this pandemic, Governor Newsom implemented executive orders that every registered voter would get a mail-in ballot, and you have until October 19th, as I've mentioned before, to get that ballot. And of course, it's not too late to vote. There are many ballot issues and ballot measures and candidates that I'm on board with because I'm representing, I won't talk specifically about candidates and who to vote for because we're a 501c3, we can't endorse a candidate. However, we can talk and take clear positions on ballot measures and propositions. There are Muslim candidates running in OC, as you guys may know. Faisal Ghazi, he's running, and candidates who recognize the importance of the Muslim community. And they're actually the ones that are opening the doors for our youth to be able to run later. And also, if a Muslim candidate gets elected, he's actually going to, most likely he's going to hire, he or she is going to hire a Muslim from our community to work on their campaign. That's something that we're lacking with the candidates who are in office currently. We don't have really representation in their offices, so we have no voice in their office, and they're there to take our votes, they're probably there to take our money, but it's important to support someone who understands and advocates for our communities. So there are three propositions I'd like to discuss tonight. There are several propositions, but there's three specifically that I think is more relevant to the youth who are watching. So first, I'd like to start off with Prop 16. And Prop 16 is known as Opportunity for All. Prop 16 would allow for gender, race, ethnicity, color, and national origin to be considered as one of the factors in public employment, public contracting, and public education. Prop 16 would repeal Article 1, Section 31 of the California Constitution, which was added by Prop 209 in 1996. In doing so, it would work to establish more equitable institutions and create fair opportunities for all Californians. In California, we believe in giving everyone, regardless of race, gender, an equal shot at fair wages, good jobs, and quality schools, but we're not there yet. Women and people of color still face discrimination in hiring, employment, contracting, and education. So California is one of only nine states that bans affirmative action as a tool to fight discrimination. Proposition 16 is our chance to change that by ending the ban, expanding opportunity for all. And another thing, affirmative action refers to a complex set of policies adopted by governments and institutions to take a proactive measure to increase proportion of historically disadvantaged minority groups. So the wealthy and powerful in California, they control access to lucrative contracts, top universities, state contracts, and other opportunities. And people that don't have these connections, they're passed over. So Prop 16 is a tool to begin dismantling structural racism and sexism. We'll all do better when we have equal chances to succeed, but women in California earn less than 80 cents for every dollar a white man will make. And for women of color and single moms, it's even worse. It's unfair and it hurts families and our economy. Prop 16 offers a path to fair treatment for all. In states that allow affirmative action, women and people of color compete on an equal footing for jobs, promotions, and contracts. And without affirmative action, small businesses in California owned by women and people of color lose out on bigger, wealthier companies for government contracts. Proposition 16 will give women and people of color a fair shot to succeed. So with that, KRLA encourages you to vote yes on Prop 16. So the next thing I'll talk about is something that I've worked on with my allies for quite some time. And this is Prop 17. This is voting rights for people who have completed their prison term. If yes passes on Prop, if yes on 17 passes, it will allow for voting rights to be restored for those who have been released from prison. And again, once they have been released from prison, they'll have the right to vote. After the Civil War, California refused to ratify the 15th Amendment of the U.S. Constitution, which was implemented to prohibit voting restrictions based on race. So instead, what they did is they added people who had a felony charge even after serving their sentence and prohibited them from voting. A parolee that spends 3 years on parole usually spends 3 years on parole, and our democracy is rooted in the fact that everyone's voice matters. Currently, there are 50,000 parolees in California who have no voting rights, and therefore their voice is not heard. It does not matter. These are folks who serve their sentence and were vetted by the parole board to reenter society. The intent of parole is to successfully reintegrate into society and force and have positive citizenship. So how can you expect someone who have positive citizenship who doesn't have their most fundamental right, and that is the right to vote. They live and work in our communities. They are paying tax. They are tax-paying citizens, and then for these reasons, they should have their voices restored and have full participation in our democracy. We advocated for this at MDAC earlier in the year when we presented our side to our state senators. It passed the state Senate and now is on the ballot for voters to decide on Prop 17. Other groups taking advocating for this is the ACLU of California, All of Us or None, Secretary of State Alex Padilla, the League of Women Voters, Initiate Justice, People Over Profits, and White People for Black Lives. A couple of interesting facts about this. If a person is convicted of a felony, there are 18 states which never restore voting rights. In Kentucky, Iowa, and Virginia, they have a lifetime ban, although the governor can issue orders to restore voting rights. There are three states, including California, that restores for voting rights after the parole is complete. 17 states that allow parolees to vote, and only two states, Vermont and Maine, that allow prisoners to vote. So with this, we encourage our community to vote yes on Proposition 17, Voting Rights for All. And finally, I want to talk about Proposition 18. Proposition 18 would allow 17-year-olds to vote in the primary and special elections if they will be 18 and eligible by the general election. So basically what that means is in the March election, primary election that we had, as long as you're 17, if this bill passes along, you're 17, you'll be able to vote in that election and in this election. Right now, the way it stands is if you're 17 in March, you weren't allowed to vote. But if you're turning 18 by November 3rd, you'll be able to vote. So currently, voters must be 18 to participate in any local election, state or federal. This constitutional amendment would pave the way for 17-year-olds who qualify to vote under this proposition, even to seek office. So basically, the law says only registered voters can run for elected positions. It's nothing new. It was the sixth time that lawmakers had considered the idea, but they never really brought it forth. So nationwide, there's at least 18 states, including Washington, D.C., which allow 17-year-olds to vote who would be eligible to vote in the next general election. So allowing teens to vote would be the first first-time voters in an election cycle to participate from the beginning. It could increase interest in voter participation amongst the youth. It's a simple way to raise voices for young voters. Many of them already work and pay taxes, and they can join the military, so why not allow them to vote? Proposition 18 is not some radical move that will lower the voting age to 17, and that's really a misconception that people with no one 18 are promoting. So no matter how old you are, remember Prop 18 is fundamentally about letting those who are 18 on election day who have an equal opportunity to say throughout the election cycle. So Prop 18 is about 18-year-olds as much as it is about joining the 18 other states that beat us to the punch. So with this, CARE-LA urges you to vote yes on Prop 18. So that's basically the three propositions that I stand for. And I'll take any questions on the other propositions as well, or any other questions you have from the audience.
All right, Brother Mustafa, I actually have a question about Prop 18. So I was 17 in March, and I would have been eligible to vote in the primaries had Prop 18 already been passed. And I am in favor of Prop 18, but something that I noticed those in opposition of Prop 18 say is that it will cost California's government hundreds of thousands of dollars every 2 years to register 17-year-olds to vote in the primaries. And what do you have to say about this issue?
So a state like California with the sixth largest economy, you're talking about hundreds of thousands of dollars, which is really, really a drop in the bucket. There's a lot of nonprofit organizations that actually take on the burden of doing this work to be able to register young people to vote. There's MSAs like your group, there's youth groups. that will take on this work. I think that 100,000 is referring to printing out more ballots. I can tell you from experience, there's more than 100,000 ballots that have been thrown out that people actually don't, use. You know, there's at the Register of Voters office, there's boxes and boxes of ballots. So they actually don't really need to print that out. They could do with what they have already.
Yeah, I think I'm pretty much in favor of Proposition 18, because I feel like while there might be some drawbacks, like as you mentioned, Amina, with like some of the other basically like what would come with allowing 17-year-olds to vote, but I also do think that it's really essential, especially now, for youth to get involved with this work, to get engaged with it, because I feel like a lot of the times a lot of people assume that because we're young, because of like our age, that we're not, I guess, eligible to like be able to understand what's going on in our communities and what basically happens like outside of school, outside of like our personal social circles and our little kind of world. It's like we're not like knowledgeable enough to vote on these sort of issues that are actually impacting us, not only us also, but the community overall. And so I think this would be a great opportunity for a lot of youth to become more involved in this sort of a work and allow more of like an insight, a lot more of like different perspectives and various ways of in the future kind of bringing about new solutions and stuff like that. So I think just engaging the youth in this kind of a work and just being able to allow them that opportunity to become involved, that's something that I think would be a really great step forward in terms of, especially with voting, because that's a right that not a lot of people already have access to, but the fact that the youth are going to be able to have the, are going to be entitled to vote, that would be, a great step forward, I'd say.
Yes, I absolutely agree with that. And when people say that youth are too young and they don't know, they actually know more than their parents. They're the ones that are out there trying to learn, attending conferences like this, wanting to learn from candidates, meeting candidates. They're actually more engaged and more knowledgeable than their parents, and the parents can actually benefit from that.
Yeah, and I think like even then, like, 17 and 18 is only a year difference. So I don't see the entire like commotion of why people would be so upset over giving the chance of like 1 year ahead. And then also speaking of age, how do we draw the limit with like age? Like, would we be able to say in the future, if we were to pass it to extend the voting right to 17-year-olds, would we be able to maybe 16-year-olds? Like, is there like a particular reason that it's at 17 and not anything younger? I think also maybe because like, younger age obviously maybe wouldn't be like as knowledgeable, I'd say, but at the same time, like, where, how do we like know where to draw the limit?
So in California, the nice thing is that it's a constitutional vote where we have to first start out with a proposition by gathering signatures to be able to actually vote on the proposition. So first you have to gather signatures. The more signatures, the better. So if anyone wants to, after Proposition 17 passes, and then they want to raise the lower the age to 16, let's say, then they have to try a ballot measure on that, collect all the signatures, present that to the Secretary of State, and then they'll change it, change the rules. And well, they won't change the rules. They'll put it on the ballot as a proposition, and the Californians will have the right to vote yes or no on that. So it's not something that would happen right away. There's a process to it.
All right, so we have a question from the audience asking us, what are some essentials that we should know when voting? Are there some common mistakes that people make, especially given the fact that we're all voting by mail, or we're all getting our ballots by mail, and so therefore we're prone to making more mistakes? Is there something that we should look out for to ensure that our ballot and our vote does count?
Yeah, so what I recommend is, I've always voted by mail. My wife's always voted at the polling booth. That's what she likes. She likes to take my daughter, who's 14, she likes to take her there and show her voting, which is cool. But me, I don't know what's going to happen on election day. So I want to get my ballot in as early as possible. So when the ballot comes in, you want to make sure that you read the ballot, that you look it over, you make sure that everything that you want to vote on is shaded out with either a blue or black pen. And you don't have to vote on everything, right? There's lots of propositions that actually, there's three propositions in particular that CARE took a neutral stance on. So you don't have to necessarily vote on everything. You don't have to vote on all the candidates, but you want to make sure that you circle in the ones that you do want to vote on. You want to make sure that you print your name and sign the outside of the ballot. You want to make sure you seal the ballot, and you want to make sure you drop it off at a secure, like at the post office or the library. They have, you don't have to wait till next weekend. You can do it now. You can walk in there and actually drop it off. So you don't necessarily have to drop it off in the mailbox. You could actually go to your local library or voting center and drop that off as well.
All right. And so since I'm 18, I have a lot of friends that also turned 18. And something that I think the youth tend to feel is that their vote doesn't really matter. As we've seen in the 2016 election, some people are pretty disheartened by the results. And so what would you tell to somebody who feels like their vote doesn't matter?
So in the, I will say in the presidential election, right, we have electoral colleges. So no matter which way we vote, you and I vote, we're gonna vote blue, because that's what the that's what our state is. It's a blue state, so we're gonna be voting blue with the electoral college. What's more important than voting in the presidential race to make sure that you vote all the way down ballot. So you wanna vote for your congressperson, your senators, your state officials, all the way down to your city council, your mayor, your school board, and your water district. So make sure you vote all the way down board, because in these races, every single vote counts. It's a popular race. I'll give you a couple examples. I have a friend of mine, Christian Ramirez, that ran for San Diego City Council District 9 in 2018. And guess what? He lost by three votes. He lost by three votes. That's his volunteers going over to one house and not knocking on that door. That's some one of his volunteers or himself not picking up the phone one time and calling a household that has three people or five people that could have voted, right? But there's so many people in our community who think that their vote doesn't count, so they just won't vote. And people like Cristiano Ramirez, who stands with our community, actually, he stands with the Muslim community, very outspoken. He could have been representing District 9 on San Diego City Council. And on a positive note, there's also a person named Karina Contreras that ran in Vista District 2 in 2018. And she actually won at the last minute by 16 votes. 16 votes. You know, she was losing to an incumbent. And because she knocked on doors, because she called, and the people in her community were actually people who voted in person on the day, on election day. So she thought she was going to concede the election like 3 days before, but they keep counting for up to 30 days. And she ended up winning, you know, and she's a community activist that had really no experience in this type of work, but she's an excellent city council person who's doing so much for her district, which is a very underserved district.
Yeah. On that same note, so when the pandemic got very serious and when we shut down schools for like 2 weeks, our board of education for our school district met up, and then we had conversations about what we'll do regarding opening schools or keeping them closed. And I remember when they first came out with their initial solution, a lot of family members and students and staff and teachers were extremely upset by it. And at that moment, we also kind of realized, and we had this conversation about how these are people, our board of directors and our board of educators are people that we elect. So we have the opportunity to take these people out of their position of office if we don't agree with their policies and their decisions. So it's really important to keep that in mind, like with COVID especially, these are the ones that were kind of determining our fate and we're putting our lives at risk. So we should really take that into account and really focus on our local elections as well.
Yes, it's very important to build power, especially for the Muslim community. Because if you don't vote and you're not out there calling your local city council person, you're not attending these town halls, you're not attending these meetings, they're not going to know who you are. So when you do have a problem and you want to bring it up to them, the school board or city council or the mayor, they're not going to listen to you because they have no idea who you are. There's several masjids that have, you know, when masjids open, there's always a problem with these Islamophobes protesting out front, even with the commissions, city commissions, which authorize the permits to be able to operate. You know, they'll vote down they'll violate our First Amendment rights. And when we try to fight back against them, you know, we just don't have a voice. You know, we don't, because we're complacent as a community. And it's very important to not be complacent, raise your voice. And this is why I really believe that it's to bring the youth in, because you are who is going to do the work on this.
Yeah, so adding on, I actually wanted to go tie back to Proposition 15. I know a little bit about it, but in terms of for schools, I understand that the entire goal of the proposition is to increase funding for schools. Isn't the government already supposed to be doing that to be like, you know, like saving money first to be put into schools? And where is it exactly going? Like, how will that money be spent for schools, for our education system in particular?
So basically Proposition 15, if it passes, and I'm a very big proponent of Proposition 15, I've been working on this since 2017, and I'm glad CARE took the position to vote yes on Proposition 15, our schools and communities first. So if it passes, the 10% of the, it's gonna raise $12 billion a year. It's expected to raise $12 billion a year by closing the loopholes in Proposition 13. So what that means is Proposition 13 was designed in 1978 for property taxes to be protected on residential property. So basically before 1978, if you don't mind, I just want to go back a little bit in history just to give you some context. So in 1978, what was happening, before 1978, what was happening is houses, the budget, the state budget was expanding and expanding, but property taxes were assessed on every 2 years. So if you owned a house every 2 years, your property would be reassessed and you'd be paying higher and higher taxes. So Proposition 13 was introduced and voted on to stop that, right? So right now what you see is property taxes are only assessed when the property is sold and the new owner will pay those property taxes. So if you never sell your house and you bought your house in 1950, you'll be paying those property taxes from 1950. What happened was these giant corporations took advantage of the loopholes of Prop 13. And then they started, really exploiting these loopholes so they wouldn't have to pay current market value on these, on their properties. They were paying 1978 and earlier values. And that that really affected our schools and communities from vital money. So going forward is Prop 15 will close those loopholes, and it's gonna generate $12 billion to our schools and communities. The way I understand it is 60% is going to go to our communities, which will go towards infrastructure. It'll go towards our safety nets, our social services, you know, our schools, and like fire districts and things like that. Now, 40% of that $12 billion will go to our schools, and that's every year. So there's different counties have different amount of money that they'll get. I'll give you an example, like the Vista Unified School District will get $13 million every year. And the reason I bring this up is because the money is gonna be divided equitably, right? So the community, the school districts that need it more are gonna get more money. So things are equal.
Yeah, I think it's important, especially now with COVID and all. I think a lot of schools I know are in need of funding, whether that be with like supplies or like PPE or whatever it is, whatever they are in need of. I think it's really important now more than ever to address those needs and wants, particularly for education systems, because we're like, as a student, like I can say that like our school, like we're going through a pretty like unusual time right now. And so any kind of support that would, I guess, kind of like address these needs and like wants for like whatever it may be would help a lot, especially during these times. And I also, I think I mentioned earlier with Proposition 15 is that some of the money would also go to local governments. How, like what kind of services in particular would we be kind of like included?
Basically there's like strict accountability where the local governments, it'll go to the like city councils, but especially the county board of supervisors, which will distribute that money to the school districts. But basically where this money will go to in the local governments, it's intended to be used for the social services, really. So if you look at Orange County, you look at San Diego County, we don't have a county hospital, actually. That county hospital, the nearest county hospital is in LA County, the USC Medical Center. So it would go through towards programs like that. It would go towards healthcare, mental health, it'll go towards like building senior centers and community centers. you know, like 60%. And then the 40% will go not just towards K-12 education, but also community colleges as well.
All right, so I have a question in Proposition 16. So some people argue that this proposition is much like affirmative action for universities in the sense that they feel like it would discriminate against people who are white or males or in certain majority demographic categories. So what would you say to those who are opposed to Proposition 16?
So basically it's an opportunity for all, right? So each, with Proposition 16, everybody gets equal opportunity, whether you're white, black, Latino, Muslim, a woman of color. So basically it's not just for, it's to level the playing field all across the board. Right now we see white men, especially white men, really getting the opportunities. They'll get the opportunity as far as being granted a state contract, you know, a better job, higher paying job. And what this will do is this will really level the playing field. And it's really shown that this is what it does in the states that it's already implemented. You know, a progressive state like California should already have something like Proposition 16 in place.
So you'd mentioned earlier that, for example, you said that a woman makes about 80 cents to every dollar a man makes. So is the goal of Proposition 16 essentially to just close that wage gap between disproportionately affected communities?
Yes, absolutely. That's the that's what we need to do. We need to equal the playing field. You know, there's no reason in 2020 that a woman should make less than a man, especially a woman making less than a white man. It's not. It's 2020. We've come too long, and we've worked towards this for too long. So there's no reason it should be in place right now.
Yeah, I agree with the entire kind of idea of promoting opportunity for anyone, no matter like their gender or nationality or et cetera, and so on and so forth. And then also not just as Amina mentioned with the gender gap, but also with minorities. There are so many different groups of people who aren't already able to attain those opportunities or able to get the same advantages in comparison to maybe like their white or male or wealthy, et cetera, counterparts. And I also think that this would be like California's next step in like ending systematic oppression. I am a little bit more familiar with Proposition 16 specifically because I took part in CARE's MYLI Proposition 16 webinar that took place last Friday. And so I have done research on Prop 16 specifically. And I do know that Proposition 16 is aimed towards eliminating discrimination and to this decrease gender bias and racism and to just overall increase diversity within our communities, especially because like California, we have one of the most diverse communities, I'd say in the entire country. And the fact that we're one of nine states that still hasn't, I guess, kind of, taken action on this is kind of a major setback, especially now that we're in 2020. So it's about time that we took account into the needs of those who then again, like they don't have those opportunities, who haven't had those opportunities prior to what we could do, what can be passed with Proposition 16.
Right. And well, from what I understand is people of color are actually the majority in California. So if you combine all the people of color, we're actually the majority. And, you know, white people are the minority. So it's time that we have equal representation in every part of our government, every part of society.
All right. So this isn't what we had on the agenda, but I was also wondering if you could talk a little bit about Proposition 22. It's been pretty big in the news, and it'd be great if you could just explain a little bit about Proposition 22 and then why CARE votes no on Proposition 22.
Sure. And Proposition 22 is for the Uber and Lyft drivers.
Yes.
So to be honest with you, I'm not too familiar with Proposition 22. When we had our ballot party yesterday, it was Shaheen Nasser, that was our policy and advocacy coordinator, that was talking about that. But from what I understand, as far as Proposition 22, if you don't mind, let me just grab something real quick. So So basically, Proposition 22, an independent contractor can choose when, where, and how much they work. An employee has their schedule and work set out for their employer. Basically, the no one Proposition 22 is where the rideshare. Yes, on Proposition 22 is where the rideshare companies are actually telling you how to vote. So what I see is anytime there's big corporations, giant corporations fighting for something, but then the workers actually want something else. I believe in going with the voice of the workers.
Yeah, I do think that like the workers should get a say in the job that they're kind of like taking part in. Like they should have a voice in that too.
All right, so there's actually a question from the audience on Proposition 16. So they ask, what does it mean that for gender, race, ethnicity, color, or national origin to be considered as one of the many factors in public employment? So they're asking, how is that actually implemented? And is there a ratio that companies have to follow when hiring? Do they have to have like a certain male to female, POC to white ratio that they have to keep?
Yeah, so after Proposition 16 passes, companies will have to follow the legislation in Proposition 16 and be able to have a quota on hiring women, people of color, even promoting them. You know, if they're qualified, they should be promoted the same as a white male would be promoted. And then also as far as like getting state contracts, it's going to be Proposition 16 will have something in it where it's going to tell cities and the state of California that they have to award a certain amount of contracts to companies that are owned by women and people of color as well.
All right. Oh, sorry. You can go.
Sorry, you go.
Okay. So an audience member also has a question about Proposition 24. They're saying that CARE votes no on Proposition 24, and they're saying that it looks like a tricky proposition about how our information is used by companies. So could you give us a little bit more information about why CARE is voting no?
Proposition 24 has to do with changes in consumer privacy laws. And basically, Proposition 24 is really not what it seems like. Voting yes on Proposition 24, that's going to be where companies have these privacy laws where they're going to be like Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn. They're going to actually charge a fee to be able to keep your information secret or keep your information from getting it. We shouldn't have to pay a fee. This should already be in place where a company has to be has to hold our information confidential. And they really don't have a right or even a right to charge us to keep our own information confidential. It's like blackmail.
There's another question in the chat that was put in a little bit earlier, but I know because like right now there are a lot of like youth who would like to contribute in some sort of a way to this vote, to the voting process, but aren't actually able to vote. Is there anything that you would recommend that youth would be able to do to actually help and contribute to these causes if they aren't old enough to vote?
Yeah, so what I would do is I would contact our CARE office. We have lots of programs. So you were talking about the Muslim Youth Leadership Institute. That's our MGN as well. I would get involved in that. And, you know, with that, you'll have a lot of knowledge. By the time you're allowed to vote, you'll be an expert. And I know you attended last week and you must have learned a lot. I would definitely start that way to get involved in our youth programs at CARE.
Yeah, I think a huge step with like, I think a lot of people when they think of like taking action, it means like a big, huge step forward. And when you aren't exactly like able to in some sort of a way, they're kind of like, you feel a little bit down about that and you feel like you can't actually make a change. But I think a lot of the times it starts with something as small as actually educating yourself and learning more about the world around you and what's going on in your world. And by starting there, you're doing something instead of saying that you can't really do anything because of how like old you are. And so that's always a great way to start. And I definitely recommend CARE's youth programs. They've actually helped me with me a lot in my journey with actually learning about the world around me and how I can create a change in ways that aren't even like as kind of promoted as something as big as being able to vote.
All right, let's see if we have any more questions from the audience. If you guys have any more questions, just feel free to drop them in the chat or in the Q&A. Either one works. Oh, also, I did have a question about Proposition 17. So that's the one where it'll allow people on parole to vote. I know at first when I'd heard about the rule, I was a little wary about that proposition. Just because I was concerned about certain ex-felons getting the right to vote. Do you think that the ratio of dangerous ex-felons to those who were just charged with misdemeanors and are on parole right now is low enough to take that chance? I guess I was just kind of concerned about people who have committed serious crimes being on parole and being allowed to vote. What do you think about that one?
That's actually a valid concern. I mean, like, you know, they have to first face the parole board, right? And then they have to see if they're even eligible to be able to be released in society. If there's like someone that committed murder, they're probably never going to get out of prison, and they're never going to have the right to vote. So what this proposition does is it assesses first before they even get released or even they're allowed to, you know, seek any type of parole. They have to present themselves in front of a parole board. And if they think that they're not going to be a danger to society, then you know they'll be released on that 3 years. And in that time, because they're trying to integrate back into society, they're paying taxes. You know, they should be able to vote.
Yeah, I think the fact that like because that they're transitioning back into society and that they're able to, I guess, they're able to like attain access to their rights. Voting is also a right. And so I think that like if they are getting into the process of going back to society in the way that they were before, I think why not give them the chance to vote as well? Because if you think about it, despite their criminal records or whatever they might be, like yes, there are some like severe cases that maybe they might not ever be able to get that right back. But in some cases, I think most of the times it's something not as like super extreme or anything like that. And so if you think about it, like despite their criminal records, they're still human and they have the right to vote. And if you think about it, like a lot of the times, like if you look at our history, there are a lot of times where like groups of people, they fought so much and so long for that right to vote. And so I think like just because of a criminal record, they're still human. They still, I think, in my opinion, they should have the chance to be able to, voice their opinions because they are members of, there are citizens of our society. And so they should be given that opportunity no matter what.
Right. And, you know, in our criminal justice system, it's based on, it's a racist criminal justice system where they're going to charge Black and brown people with misdemeanor crimes with, you know, more seriously. They're going to look at, and it's going to be like a revolving door. They spend their time in prison, they come out, they're on parole, but in that parole, they're not able to get a job because they have to put down that they're a parolee. They're not able to, you know, pay their fines, and then it's a revolving door. They end up going back in because they're not able to pay a fine, and they end up maybe doing something that will violate their parole. So if they're able to vote, they're also able to, talk to their politicians, talk to their state senators or assembly people to change these type of laws that is a revolving door policy to keep them locked up.
Yeah, I think what's interesting is that you'd mentioned that people on parole do have to pay taxes. And that just reminded me of a slogan during the Revolutionary War when they said no taxation without representation. And these people are being taxed, but they're not getting the representation that they deserve.
Yeah, absolutely, so, I can put it better myself.
Oh, and we also have a question in the audience asking us where we can find unbiased information on candidates and propositions. I think that's something we all kind of want to look for right now, just a completely unbiased opinion, or not opinion, I should say, unbiased information.
Yeah, so to get the unbiased information, look at our voter guide. Go to carela.org and you can download our voter guide. It's very thorough. It's really unbiased information. You can read both sides of a proposition. You can read both sides of a candidate. We also have, I won't even mention that because that's our C4, so I won't get into that, but that's what I would do. I would go to carela.org and download our voter guide.
All right, and a person from Facebook also had a question asking you about Proposition 23. They have mixed feelings about that one. So could you please explain CARE's stance on Prop 23?
So CARE's stance on Prop 23, I don't believe we took a position on that. And the reason is because we're a civil rights organization. Our wheelhouse is civil rights. We don't really deal with issues like kidney dialysis and things like that. That's not what we represent. So basically we look to our allies, we look to people who have worked on this, and you know, there's a pros and cons of both sides, so we decided not to take a position on that.
There's another comment in the chat saying that
I can't hear you too well.
Get involved in politics and for positions, but the current Islamic, non-Islamic.
Could you please repeat that, Mariam? I think you're getting a little cut off. Yeah. Yeah. Can you try again?
Wait, can you guys hear me now?
Yeah. Now you're good.
Okay, awesome. So someone commented in the chat, they were saying basically that we know Muslims should get involved in the process, and like, it's really important that we get into politics, because then again, these are the, they're going to be placing like direct impacts on our communities. And so I named some Muslims in Congress right now, they currently align with non-Islamic values. What's your stance about that?
So there's not everything that I agree with Congresswoman Ilhan Omar, and maybe sometimes I don't agree with Rashida Tlaib too, but here's the thing. With these two women in Congress now, we have conversations that we would never expect to have 10 years ago, right? They brought up the anti-BDS bill or the pro-BDS bill, where we would never have that conversation. Maybe it won't pass the floor, but it's there. People are talking about it. So we have to have that type of representation in the Congress. And especially in local politics, we need our voices heard. We need someone to portray our voice to the rest of to the board and have a bigger platform, right? We really don't have a platform to be able to express that type of thing. So maybe they won't represent all of our values. Maybe they'll be contrary to what we believe. And that's kind of something that I fight with too, but you got to look at the good things that they're bringing into our communities. And they're giving, I mean, how beautiful was it when Ilhan Omar was grilling Wolfowitz in the house? It was amazing. Like, you would never expect to see a hijabi up there grilling, you know, someone like Wolfowitz. It was fantastic. It's progress.
Yeah, and somebody also commented in chat saying that it seems pretty hard to be in Congress and maintain your Muslim identity. And I think that's true. You can look at how the media has attacked Ilhan Omar and these crazy twisted rumors that have spread about her. So at a certain level, it gets really hard to keep up with that Muslim identity and keep your faith strong when everybody's like attacking you for like just these false, horrible claims. So I assume it must be really tough.
Yeah, and you'll never have a candidate, whether it's Muslim or not, that's going to agree with every one of your issues. And yeah, that's something I had to learn the hard way, because I always expected that, you know, but that's something that my wife had to, you know, explain to me, that you'll never have, you know, the perfect candidate. You just won't.
Yeah. And I think given the fact that, like, as you mentioned, like, I completely agree with the fact that, like, you can't make someone like an exact representation of your values that would contradict with someone else's. And I think the entire point is just like, if you look at the bigger picture, it is definitely a huge step forward, the fact that we have people like Ilhan Omar and Rashida Tlaib in Congress right now. So I would say that's a pretty huge success. And what we can do from now is to just keep that momentum going. Another question in the chat is, what are some things that we can do after voting to help further these causes?
We need to hold our elected officials accountable. We can't let them slip. This includes, you know, if whoever the president is, Joe Biden, if he gets elected, we can't be complacent. That's one thing we do as Democrats, and we do as people who, whatever party we support, we fail to hold our elected officials accountable for their bad decisions. We need to, if there's an issue that's important to us, we need to bring that to them right away and show them, so we're not reactive, we're proactive on our stances.
Yeah, I think it's a super, super important to, I mean, yes, like we're supposed to be able to trust the people who are like, who have higher positions of power, because they are the people who are going to be in responsible for the laws that are being passed and such like that. But I think also, it's also really important that in the times that they do commit acts of injustice, in the cases that that does happen, it's also important, like we have the sort of like duty to speak out against that, no matter what the circumstances are, no matter who it is, no matter what circumstances are. So it's good that we are standing up for, that we're adhering to our Muslim ideals in the realm of politics. But at the same time, also need to know that it's also important to like, you need to be flexible, like you need to be understanding, but at the same time, you need to be like firm. You need to be able to speak out against the injustice whenever it's deemed necessary. This is another question from the chat too. It's a super generic one, but you could go ahead and answer it. It's how do we actually register to vote?
So to register to vote, you go to sos.ca.gov and you could click on register to vote and you'll be registered. Yeah.
Yeah, super simple. I would say make sure you don't do it like in a public place with like not insecure Wi-Fi, just because you'll be inputting stuff like your social security number in. So you don't want that information to be compromised. So just be careful about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was filling out my registration back in March in a public library. And I was like, oh, like, somebody could just tap into this Wi-Fi system and I could, you know, I could lose all this. So then I was just a little wary about that.
Yeah, it's probably better just to do it. You can even do it on your phone. It doesn't, it's easy to use even without a mobile app on the Secretary of State's website. Yeah.
There's another question in the chat asking, what are some issues that are not on the ballot as a proposition that you think should be there? Because there are definitely a lot, I'd say.
Yeah, there's one in particular. Let me just look through this real quick. Okay, there's a Proposition 19 as far as the property tax rules, which gives special groups like people who are 55 plus. Let's say they're involved, they have a house, and then they lose that house because of a natural disaster like a wildfire or an earthquake. They could actually, right now, one time in their life, they can move to another property that's higher value and pay the same property taxes that they had on the house that was destroyed, right? So they can carry that over. So what Proposition 19 does, is it allows you to do it three times. And it also allows other groups that aren't 55, maybe it's someone that has a disability to be able to enjoy that. And you can't really enjoy it because you lost your house, right? But it allows you to carry over that tax rate as well. What I would say is 55, I think it should apply to everybody. So not just 55, but if you lose your house to a natural disaster or anything that you can't help and you have to buy a new home, you shouldn't have to pay higher taxes on that new home because you weren't intending to move in the first place.
Do you know why they chose 55 as the age? Was there some significance behind it?
I think 55 is the age where our entire country has seen people to reach a age of seniors. I know they say 65 now, but 55, we heard of the 55 plus communities that are still around today. So I think that's why they chose.
Okay.
55, yeah.
Oh, so there's another question in chat asking why there isn't more wildfire help and support. That's something that we really need. So do you know why that might be the case?
Absolutely. You know, and that's where Proposition 15 is going to come in. So let's vote on Proposition 15. It's going to bring so much money into our fire districts in each county. It could be in LA County, it's going to be, you know, a couple hundred million dollars that I'll bring every year. So that's why another reason that Proposition 15 is very important. You know, it's only with the $12 billion I mentioned, only 10% of the largest businesses will be raising 92% of that $12 billion. So it really doesn't affect most of the businesses and there's no reason to be afraid of it.
Yeah, again, this is for this proposition really only affects large corporations, right? So those with small businesses don't have anything to really worry about.
It actually is good for small business because I hear that small businesses are going to be taxed to death. It's not true. They're actually going to enjoy a benefit of getting a $500,000 a year tax incentive, where if they buy equipment for their business, let's say it's a small farm that buys farming equipment, or if it's like a state farm agent that will buy copy machines and things like that, computers, they'll be able to write off up to $500,000 in taxes.
So how do they determine small businesses? Is this just a company that has a commercial property smaller, less than $3 million?
Yes, that's okay. Right.
Yes, we have about a few minutes left. If you guys do have any last minute questions, be sure to drop it in chat or in the Q&A, wherever you guys are able to, or whatever, from whatever platform you guys are on. We can take any last minute questions. Brother Nizam, do you have anything that you'd like to say? Anything that we didn't address before that you'd like to?
Yes, definitely. So basically, we have our Muslim Day at the Capitol. We've had it for several years. This is the first year that we had it virtual. Usually we take we go up to Sacramento. We have about 700 people from across the street, one of the largest advocacy days out of any group. So I would recommend, because it's online, and I'm pretty sure that next year it's gonna be online as well, that you attend. The attendance this year wasn't so great, but the people who attended, especially young people, you can learn how to talk to, remember we're talking about holding our elected officials accountable. Well, this is a great way to learn how to talk to these elected officials and meet them. And, you don't have to be 18 to do that. You could be 14, you could be 15. So I encourage our young brothers and sisters to sign up for MDAC. It's going to be in the summer. Follow our Care California Facebook page, and you'll always get more information on that.
Yeah, so adding on to what you're saying, definitely, especially for the youth, I know because like being one of them is like, there's a lot of kind of assumption that we can't really do anything, but there are definitely so many opportunities as long as you go and you look out and you actually take advantage of those opportunities. There's a lot that you can learn and a lot that you can build for the skills that you might learn when you are actually able to take further action. And I think the entire point of this webinar is that I know that a lot of us as youth right now aren't able to vote. And so you guys might be wondering, like, why the heck are we doing an entire event on like the propositions, even when we're not even able to vote? The entire point is just so that you guys are actually aware of these issues and aware of the effects that they might have, whether they're passed or not, because at the end of the day, you're still a part of the community, no matter what limitations you might think you have or whatever you think like the community like limits on you for able to kind of take action and to take part in your community. And so keep in mind that even though like it seems like right now you can't really do much, there are definitely ways that you can help out. So take those small steps, build up those skills. And I think just as long as you're contributing to your society in some way, no matter how small, it's never wasted. So I wish you guys best on your journeys. And I think we have like about 1 minute left. I'm gonna check to see if there are any last minute questions, but Amina, did you wanna add anything?
If you're above the age of 16, you can actually pre-register to vote. So there's always that, you know, pre-register. So yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
You guys mind if I read something real quick from our Immigrants' Rights Center?
Oh, not at all, go for it.
Okay, so at CARE Immigrants' Rights Center, we have assisted over 5,000 individuals to gain immigration status over the past 6 years. So clients include individuals seeking asylum, legal permanent residence, and citizenship. So family reunification and victims of domestic violence. Services are provided at little or free charge to low-income immigrants, and immigrant benefits have tremendous impact on an individual status and security in the U.S. So we provide completely free citizenship services. It is estimated that more than 500,000 green card holders are actually eligible to naturalize in greater Los Angeles region alone. It is vital that green card holders apply for citizenship because it allows them to secure their future in the US. US citizenship also gives the opportunity, the ability to vote, bring your close family members to the US and provide you with the opportunity to run for office. Let me share, I'm not gonna share some stories about that, we'll go over time. And we encourage every non-citizen to contact CARE to get free legal consultation. If you or anyone you know can benefit from our Immigrants' Rights Center, contact us at 714-776-1177. And you can talk to one of our attorneys.
All right, so without further ado, thank you guys so much for watching and tuning in. We hope you guys benefited from this program. Thank you so much, Brother Nizam, for hopping onto the call and sharing with us your experience and your overviews and giving us details about the propositions. It was super helpful. We really, really appreciate it. And let's see. All right, did you want to add anything else? Anything last minute before we end it off? Or are we good?
Yeah, thank you so much, Mariam and Amina. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Yeah, of course. And then, so thanks again, everyone, for tuning on. We do have an event next Friday, as usual, 7:30 to 8:30, same time, same place. We'll be discussing mental health, featuring our guest speaker, Dr. Marwa Azab. Be sure to tune in on that, and we'll be posting further details on our social media, so be sure to keep on the lookout for that. But without further ado, thank you guys so much again. And have an amazing rest of your guys' Friday night, and we'll see you guys next week on MYG. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum.